Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
The Original Brexit, a new scientist story from the 9th of March this month, and reading a lot of New Scientist articles, the science in them pushed me into depression. This is the most uplifting, original, brilliant article I have read. Let's put my foot down. Let's put that out there ever. Okay, this is a fantastic story. It's the cover story. Britain has been breaking up with the continent for an age. Richard Webb tells the untold story of when it first bid adieu. Let's have a read of where this man's from, because it is a brilliant story. It's the executive editor of the New Scientist, so this is actually a brilliant story. Fog in the Channel, continent cut off. The apocryphal newspaper headline supposedly illustrates the insularity of the British. Weather-wise, nothing could be further from the truth today, as I peer from a gun emplacement atop the white cliffs of Dover. The view is stunning. Dead ahead is the bulbous land of Cape Grisnez, which means grey nose, I suppose. The closest tip of France, a few degrees to the left, a sharp eye can make out distinct silhouette of the Calais town hall. Britain is undoubtedly an island, just not by very much. Not even 21 miles separates England from France at their closest approach, 33 kilometres measured in suspect units across the sea. The concrete structure I've wormed my way into dates from the last time, the distance seemed perilously short, and the German forces amassed on the French coast during the Second World War. The English Channel carries huge historical psychological clout, yet as little as 10,000 years ago, you could have walked across a dry valley in front of me and been in Calais by tea time, having hardly got your feet wet. The full story of how that changed is eye-popping, and we have only recently begun to unearth it. As the political shenanigans surrounding the UK decision to leave the European Union continue, this is the story of Britain's original exit from Europe, the Brexit drama in three acts. Beautiful. You see, it's such a brilliant thing, three acts. It's a drama in three acts. Beautiful. Act 1, about 45,000 years ago, a ribbon of land stretches into the distance. To the right, a drop plunges perhaps 150 or 200 metres to the plain below. To the left, which I suppose he's looking, thing is just to the east, lapping almost to our toes, are the waters of a huge glacial lake. Small icebergs bob on its surface. We are standing on a vast natural dam. It's cold, very cold. Okay, so 550,000 years ago, first complex multicell organisms. Then 500,000 years ago, sea organisms. And then 450,000 years ago, things are getting up on land, so it didn't take long to get for it to get on land. Half a million years ago, 50,000 or so years before the scene just depicted, there was no sea where the white cliffs of Dover are today. There weren't any cliffs. There was just chalk hills arching eastwards and slightly south from the present-day England to present-day France. The main axis of Weald Ar Ros Ridge is still visible on both sides of the English Channel today. In the downs of Kent and Sussex and the chalk hills of Pas de Calais. So that's chalk. Now remember that chalk is a sea creature deposit, single cell shells. It's carbon, calcium carbonate. The ridge was the high point of a strip of land connecting the main body of Europe to the sizable protuberance stretching out to the northwest. Early humans, possibly Homo ancestor, had imported themselves onto this proto-Britain sometime before 800,000 years ago. So, I'm so wrong. It's 1,000 years. Okay, it's 450 million years ago. Okay, so this is things that are well, so the dinosaurs have, it's 64 million years ago, the dinosaurs there, it's 50 million years ago. So that's my mistake. This is all wrong. I was all wrong. The first Britons were pioneers in a harsh environment, as we know little about them. We don't know whether they had the use of fire or whether they were hunters or scavengers, says archaeologist Nick Arston of the British Museum in London. We're not even sure if they had a functional body hair at this point. The world would look unfamiliar to a modern Brit. To the south of the Weald Ados Ridge, that is, watercourses approximating today's Solent Seine and Somme drained off into the southwest into a bay of the Atlantic. The Bay of the Atlantic. To the north of the ridge, the major rivers carried waters towards the Arctic. Working westward, early equivalents of the Thames, Shield, Meuse, and Rhine. Quote, up until 500,000 years ago, these rivers were disgorging sediment, filling up huge low-lying deltaplain, says Philip Goa, the paleontologist at the University of Cambridge. Attached to the north of the ridge is the fertile delta covered to the southern half of the North Sea is today, extending to the Netherlands and Britain, probably as far up as Yorkshire. About 500,000 years ago, so I said it's 500 million years ago, is life on Earth, okay, like the sea creatures, okay, coming around the place. An icy wind began to blow from the north. The Earth entered a significant cold period during which the global temperatures dropped by more than 2 degrees C. The Arctic cap expanded, reaching as far south as the high ground of Finchley to the north of London. A shock to the established order, evidence of habitation ceases abruptly. Geographically, too, changes are afoot. You're obviously not going to, if you've got a kilometre of ice above you, you're not going to do too much. Geographically, too, changes were afoot. To the south of the Weald Ados Ridge, the Atlantic receded as a burgeoning ice cap sucked up the water. To the north, however, formerly free-draining rivers became trapped by ice. An enormous glacial lake began to form. The delta had been, it was like putting a plug in a bath when the taps were still running, said Gibbard. The water goes on rising until it can find a way out. It seems the way out can only have been through the Weald Ados Ridge sediment course in the English Channel and further. See, we're going. I'll have to finish this soon. Further to the south west, the Bay of Biscay shows sudden spike in deposition around 450,000 years ago. They also contained large amounts of glacial material consistent with that picture. Okay, so it bursts open. So you've got a huge glacial there. But how exactly it happened remained a matter of conjecture until the mid-2000s when the marine geophysicist Jenny Collier of the Imperial College London and her colleagues were mapping the floor of the English Channel. The channel is hardly deep, on average 60 metres, but until recently we had only a vague notion of what the bottom looked like. The assumption that it consisted of gently undulating perennial shifting sand dunes. The notorious Goodwin Sands, for instance, just north of Dover, lie so close to the surface that they emerge from the waves during extremely low tides, allowing locals to go out and play cricket on them. But when Collier and her team tested the multi-beam echo sounder, a new bit of kit that allowed more detailed measurements of the seabed, they found it wasn't soggy, sandy bottom they accepted. Strong tides in a funnel-shaped English Channel had pulled material about and piled it up in different places, much as the wind might heat up leaves in your garden. The leaves are mostly on the French side, like being piled up against the garage, side of the garage, said Collier. Denuded of sand, dramatic features were visible gashed into the bedrock on the English side. Chief among them were straight, streamlined, braided channels running east to west along the channel floor. A staggering 30 kilometres wide at places, it slices, well, it's only 33 kilometres, it slices 10 metres down to the rock. It is an ancient flood channel apparently created. That would be a pretty big flood channel. But, you know, this is the Blue Mountains have easily formed. formed by now. That's what I think. 300 million years ago, yeah. It's an ancient floodwater channel apparently created in one go by a single unimaginable influx of water. Something had thrown a ton of water down, said Collier. We're talking about something about the size of the North Sea going down in 2 weeks. Smart money is on it actually having been the North Sea. In 1980s, the British geologist Alex Smith had proposed that the Wheeler Dross Ridge had been catastrophically breached following the build-up of water behind it. In this picture, at some point around 450,000 years ago, water began to flow over the ridge in vast quantities, tumbling down the escarpment and overwhelming the dry valley to the south in a mega flood the likes of which the world has only rarely seen. Quote, the water spills over the bath at the lowest point it can find, said Gibbard, and that appears to be the Dover Strait. Smith's catastrophist ideas had seemed rather beyond the pale at the time, but the findings of Collier's team, published in Nature 2007, backed it up. A single unexpected cataclysmic event had prompted Britain's exit from Europe, but this is only the start of a torturous process. Leave didn't immediately mean leave. On the morning after the mega flood, it was clear Britain was still actually part of Europe. Okay, we'll back again reading this absolutely fabulous New Scientist article about the original Brexit. So I've lifted it out and there's lots of rain, so the magazine's slightly soggy. The first thing is that Britain is part of Europe, but the Rhine and various rivers, Somme and all that type of stuff, drain into the North Sea, which is hemmed up by glaciers. So this builds up a huge, huge lake, which pours through. That's Act 1. That's 450,000 years ago. 800,000 years ago, Britain is just part of Europe, and we believe that it's actually that there were proto-humans there. Okay. Act 2, Westminster, 125,000 years ago. So we're still before modern humans have evolved. Oh no, modern humans, I don't think, are out of Africa at this point in time. Sorry, modern humans are 200,000 years ago. A shallow, lush, vegetated valley, a little on the swampy side, a wide, sinuous river streams past, broadening to a mighty estuary. At the water's edge, hippos wallow contently. It's warm, very warm. No Big Ben bong marks the passage of time. In fact, there are no signs of early human activity whatsoever. Okay, so it's beginning to rain here at the moment. I hope you can hear that. Sea levels have fallen and risen as colder times have came and went over the past few hundred thousand years. What a beautiful English. What beautiful English words. During the coldest of these glacial periods, so much water was locked up in the ice that the sea levels were almost 120 metres lower than today. The entire bed of the English Channel was dry land. The mega flood didn't change that overnight. The water raced away to the Atlantic. And the only over thousands of years did sea creep back up into the English Channel. Around 400,000 years ago, so I don't know how this goes, it seems to have poked its way through the newly made breach over Dover. Okay, so this is 450, and so they've told us 450, we're at 400, and they're telling us this is going to be a story at 125,000 years ago. Fossils of marine mollusks from this time on the valley of the Thames and the Scheldt on the Belgian side of the same characteristics, indicating they were brought there by the same sea. But the part of the valley of the Rhine that is just a little to the north has a different fossil fauna, so it was never flooded from the south. What we can reconstruct is the following. The ice sheets beat their retreat from Fidgley and beyond. They re-expose the delta of the southern North Sea is now, as well as uncovering an extra slip of glacial material that their bulldozing action had deposited on. Although low-lying, this strip of land connecting Britain with present-day Netherlands, north of the James Estuary, provided an insurmountable obstacle for rising waters. This backstop that prevented Britain's clean exit from Europe for the next 250,000 years. So 250 is a quarter of a million years, and where the Earth is 4.8 billion years old, so that's 4,800, so this is such a small fraction of time. This is about a 20,000th of the time of the Earth. The backstop was a boom, so this is a rise up of glacial materials, just brittle and all that type of stuff. Backstop was a boom for migration to the depopulated Britain. Early Neanderthals swarmed over the land bridge. Innovations in clothing, hunting techniques, and control of fire made life in British climes a lot more comfortable, at least during the warmer periods. And so this is interesting. So there was a land bridge there of gravel, a gravel land bridge. Now the interesting aspect of it is that the Neanderthals had tools, they had fire, they had clothes, but they're not more human. It helped that early humans had, in the meantime, established themselves as the top predators in the region, allowing them to bag the best housing stock caves. Quote, around this time, you see a big shift in the ability of people to live happily there, says Ashton. But Britain's relationship with the continent was changing, if imperceptibly. The planet continued to cycle through slightly colder and slightly warmer periods. During each warm spell, the sea inundated the breach over Dover and carved it a little wider. Meantime, Landbridge was sinking, as indeed the North Sea floor continues today, on average a rate of around 10 metres every 100,000 years. So, we're going from said 400,000, it's sunk 40 metres, is that what they're saying? It was becoming less of a bridge and more of a boggy hindrance to the free movement of people, and increasingly detached Britain had turned into a less attractive destination for European migrants, and indeed for the natives. You see a drop in accessibility during the warm periods, says Ashton. The only times people should get across were when it was cold. About a quarter of a million years ago, 250,000 years ago, evidence of occupation of humans entirely ceases. The Neanderthals were there, and the humans just forget about it. Pretty amazing. This means there was no one around to observe the moment Britain truly did become the first island, as evidence to that lies hidden under the Straits of Dover. French engineers surveying possible routes for the Channel Tunnel in the 1970s had already spotted something strange in the seabed over off Dover. They discovered an enigmatic sand-filled depression that they dubbed Fosse Dangard, or Dangard the Pit. They dismissed it with Gallic shrug. They didn't survey it in any detail and simply diverted the proposed route a kilometre or so to the north, where the tunnel runs today. It isn't easy to survey the Dover Straits. More than 500 ships pass the narrowest points every day, and the regular ferries plying to and fro between Dover and Calais, and it is a hairy place to be in a jolly little geologist's boats looking at the seafloor. Is it like being on a central reservation of a motorway, said Collier. Okay, Collier's just been jumped in here. This is probably the thing. Well, we don't know who Collier is. Okay. In the end, it was Collier's colleagues from Belgium in the model of European cooperation. We got to the bottom of what was going on. That's so beautiful. There was not one, but a series of truly massive pits carved into bedrock. Together, they formed a belt oriented roughly at right angles to the strait. The deepest depression was 140 metres below the water surface. Wow. tripling this strait's maximum depth and measured to its sandy bottom. They are, it's amazing, so that's it. That's going all the way down. So that's probably over flush water digging down. Huge, absolutely huge. These pits lie where the chalk Weald Earls Ridge would have crossed the straits. Each has the same distinctive profile, deeper and more northerly end, tapering to a shallow, so this is a scooping one. They have a nice scoopy shape, said Collier, just what would have happened if water was coming over a barrier. Such plunge pools occur at the bottom of waterfalls too. The plummeting, Niagara has got plunge pools. And you can see you go along Niagara, that's lake, or whatever it is, that river, between where the two lakes drain from each other, is another old plunge pool where the big whirlpool is. They've got a big whirlpool, beautiful to see. This is in America. Such plunge pools occur at the bottom of waterfalls too, as the plummeting water scours the rock beneath. The find seems to be a clincher for the mega flood hypothesis. The barrier itself has long since eroded away, but the evidence of the water cascading over it is still there. These are some of the biggest paleo plunger pools I've seen on Earth, said David Gracie, a merit of Grant University, part of the team who discovered them. But the surveys also reveal unexpected evidence of a second mega flood. If there had been just one flood event over 450,000 years ago, deeply carved river channel indicating the passage of flood water downstream should start at the plunge pools. And it is there. But the carved channel is also upstream, approaching the strait from the North Sea. Gibbard thinks he knows what this was going on. Some 180,000 years ago, history began to repeat itself. Arthur Gain advanced far south of England and Anglia. The central Nettle blocked the free movement of water to the north. The lake again began to grow, this time behind a land bridge left behind after the first glaciation. 450,000 years ago, the flimsy black sock caved into the water's pressure. The second barrier was not made of bedrock, but sediment, said Gibbard. So it probably blasted through pretty quickly. That's a good idea. The second mega flood smashed the bridge at Dover, opening out the strait to pretty much the width it is now, while also carving out the features to its north. Just as the first flood, the effects of the second breach in Europe showed themselves only slowly as the world warmed after glaciation. By 125,000 years ago, sea levels once again risen and sat 6 meters higher than they are today. Water stretched up the Thames almost to the House of Parliament's stand now. On occasion, however, the land bridge was overcome as waters flooded from north and south. Britain was for the first time in Ireland. So that's 180 years ago. This gives the hippos wallowing in the warm Westminster swamp cause for rejoicing. If they don't show it, people don't return to the British shore for a few tens of thousands of years yet. And getting rid of the backstop wasn't the final answer either. That required the Norway solution. Okay, that's interesting. So that's 125,000 years ago. So that's fairly recent, but it's interesting it's so warm. Act 3. Doggerland. So I'm just going to see if the Doggerland. 8,200 years ago, a patchwork of swamps and lagoons, there is evidence of settlement. The odd simple hut, a fire burning here and there, small fishing boats bob around. But this is no normal day. The sea is receding. Something looms in the horizon, a long, low line of water on. And that is no ordinary wave. Oh dear, that must be a tsunami. Even after that initial successful bid to go it alone 125,000 years ago, for the most time since this Gibbard, you could have walked from Brighton to Calais or across what is now the North Sea. Whenever the temperature was down just a tick, shallow bottoms of these seas meant that they drained away entirely, become open plains, watered by major rivers. One of those rivers would have been clearly visible from the eerie tops of the White Cliffs. In colder periods over the past 100,000 years, the Channel River, running roughly along the course first carved out by the mega flood 450,000 years ago, was fed by a combined southerly flowing of waters from the Thames, Meuse, Sheet, and the Rhine. So they're all coming together. The waterways were important migration routes for megafaunas such as mammoths, woolly rhinos, bison, and indeed humans. People probably followed the animals, says Gibbon. There were major routeways. There were sources of fresh water, and there was vegetation. Early humans took advantage of them to recolonize Britain during the colder phases. The late Neanderthals arrived about 60,000 years ago. So there's still Neanderthals around all that huge amount of time, followed by a group of Homo sapiens maybe 40,000 years ago. So therein, they're pretty late. I think 30,000 years is what you possibly get. And so what is it? Aboriginals were in Australia from 65,000 years ago. The last glacial maximum, some 21,000 years ago, gave them pause of thought. It was the starting point of the third and so far final act in Britain becoming an island. Once again, the ice sheet covered most of Britain. The lower sea levels meant there was a land link now to what is now Denmark and the Netherlands. But this time, the ice sheet wasn't connected to the wider polar ice cap. With no hindrance to the flow of water, there was no repetition of the mega floods. Okay, so that's interesting. Of 450,000 and 180,000 years ago. By 9,000 years ago, the world was considerably warmer. The seas were pushing its way back up through the Straits of Dover. To the north, there was still dry land, known as Doggerland, after the Dogger Banks, a sandy feature at the bottom of today's North Sea. Its pleasant wooded valleys, meandering rivers, once would have been a paradise for stateless hunter-gatherers of the period. Stateless. So that's a bit of funny. As the planet warmed further, the area became wetter and marshier, a low-lying lagoon archipelago. The coup de grâce came 8,200 years ago. It was dramatic. An undersea earthquake triggered a huge submarine landslide off the coast of Norway, known as the Storgeget slides. They dislodged something like 3,000 cubic kilometres of materials and created a huge tsunami that raced across the North Sea. Whatever was left of the land didn't stand a chance. Overwhelmed by waves 5 meters high, once again the land bridge was connected. That connected Britain and Europe was washed away for a third time. Water rushed through the Straits of Dover, and Britain was left a glorious isolation again. Epilogue. I love this as a play, three-act play with an epilogue. The never-ending story of Britain's divorce from Europe, embedded as in flows of ice and water, is a tale of European integration. What's happening in Scotland affects what's happening in northern France. What's happening in Germany affects what's happening in southern England. Says Grassimo, there are no boundaries to geology. The complications inherent in such a picture mean our story isn't definitive, but all the evidence suggests we aren't too far wide of the mark. The potential for the idea of repeated floods opening up the Straits of Dover could come from drilling the sediments held in the depressions there, and then into the bedrock below them. To date what was laid down and when. Quote, that will give us the minimum age for the incision to the valley floor, says Gracia Marino. We can possibly unravel which process produced this infilling, where it came from and when. The team won the promise of funding to do just that from the Europe, naturally, but lost it again for lack of a strong, stable boat from which they to do the drilling, so we must wait a while yet for the confirmation. Meanwhile, where next for Britain? Will the shadowy geological forces of remain once again thwart its destiny as an independent island? As so often in the past, history certainly suggests that when a new glacial period arrives, it will suck up the seawater and sink the global sea levels to make the Straits of Dover dry once more. But that new cold spell might never come. Billions of tons of carbon dioxide we are pumping into the atmosphere each year are likely to ensure the temperatures and sea level will rise still further. So, if so, Britain will cut a diminished figure on the world stage in future, but have a wider moat. Skeptics of continental integration can rejoice that Britain will never again be part of Europe. But the story of Britain's future in Europe won't be about Brexit. It will be about climate change. Beautiful, beautiful story. Isn't it? Amazing, amazing story. Beautifully crafted article. Podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.